First is that I was actually supposed to give one talk on localization reducibility, and then my friend Rafael Krikorian decided not to come, and then I had to give two talks. So actually, I'm going to give one talk. I had to choose between making many computations in front of you twice, but I decided that I'm going to give a motivational talk, which you concentrate on actually my work with Rafael, so that it also allows me to link better with renormalization, and that you try to motivate what I'm going to do in the next talk somehow. It's also so the main point may be that to have a link to the renormalization to the title of the workshop. So what you're going to discuss is a one-dimensional quasi-periodic Schrödinger operator in one frequency with the following business: the linear operator H acting on L2 of Z, in our case, so it's a linear operator. It picks a sequence H U, and the nth entry, it does what we call a discrete Laplacian. It picks the neighbors plus some potential V of theta plus n alpha, in this our case, and times un. So there is some neighbor interaction given by discrete Laplacian plus a diagonal self-interaction here with this potential, where V. So here's where so one-dimensional in the literature is actually that this is in Z. So one-dimensional here is that when it's multi-dimensional, there's no time. So then you are out of dynamical systems. So everything that mostly connects dynamical systems gets is one-dimensional. Even when and one frequency means exactly that here this V is some function in the circle, real function, and you have some kind of irrational dynamics here. So you have alpha is, let us say, R minus Q. It's an irrational number, and then you fix some theta to define this operator. So there are several parts. So this is a potential, let us say, potential, which through this talk will be analytic. This is a frequency. And there is this number theta also that turns out to be important for some reasons with the phase. So, we'd like to understand this operator, but why should I talk about it in the dynamical systems conference? So then there is this time business, which is going to be related to the solution. So we look at the solutions of this equation, H U equals E U, and look at it formally. So don't worry about getting U in L2, just get a sequence which satisfies this formally. And this is can be written the correct equation that you get here by the following: E minus V of theta plus N alpha minus 1, 1, 0. And now here I suppose UN minus 1 is equal to UN plus 1 UN. So this eigenvalue equation. So you're looking for eigenvalues of your operator, let us say, and then is an indeterminate business. So trying to solve this equation for E is usually called energy, is a real number. So you get this formula. So you see that to recover your full solution, it's enough to know, let us say, U0, U minus 1, and start iterating, taking products by matrix that are taking on top of this system. So you have this matrix here, let's call it A of theta plus n alpha. So it's a matrix A. So you get here a map A from R over Z to SL to R. That's a And what you're getting here is that if you take matrix products A of theta, et cetera, A of theta plus n minus 1 alpha, you recover probably un minus 1. So have this. And then this is nth iterate of a certain skew product. So you have a linear skew product over rotation. So you're taking products of matrix. And this is an of theta. So you have this dynamics, this fiber dynamics, alpha A, we're taking phase space R over Z times, let's say, R2, where it is a translation here, it's a rotation here, and here you act by some linear transformation, depends on the base. So you're interested in this dynamical problem, that's this business. And then you have, of course, you can now get enough motivation to try to study this kind of dynamical systems. But you can then make the connection to spectral properties. That's what the guys are interested on. And then, for instance, I started with a very simple connection with that the spectrum of the operator H. So just one point. So understanding of the operator is linked to understanding not only one dynamical system, but a family of dynamical systems. There is a three parameter here. So it's a one parameter family of dynamical systems that is connected to that problem. Well, anyway, so the spectrum sigma of that operator is equal to the set of energies such that the cocycle is not uniformly hyperbolic. So in a sense, it's when the dynamics gets interesting, then it's exactly that you are in the spectrum of your operator. Now, there are more connections to be made, but so this is one starting point. And another connection is, well, one particular interesting aspect of such cocycles, of course, and it's determinant to the whole picture, is the question of what relates Lyapunov exponent. It's going to determine lots of things to follow, which is just L of alpha A equal integral ln 1 over n integral log a n of x dx. So you have this the Lyapunov exponent, and we are interested on many people are interested in case of positive Lyapunov exponent. We are going to be interested since we're going to be connected to renormalization. We're going to be interested in case of zero Lyapunov exponent mostly. Well, here is maybe a. I need to make connection to. So there is this fundamental example that is going to guide us through our problems, which is the case of the almost match operator. So the almost match operator. Which the case where V of theta is equal to 2 lambda cosine 2 pi theta. So here lambda is called coupling. So you're interested on so this particular model is maybe simplest model that interesting model. It has a good reason to be studied, not only is first because it appeared originally in physical literature a couple of times. It was studied then by physicists. So you can find reference going back to 30s and so on. And also, the mathematical theory is extremely beautiful of this. So that there are going to be many things particular to this operator that makes its study particularly interesting. So Let me say, I didn't say much about how does it look like. I talked about spectrum that should be interested in it. It's not clear how it does it look like. So now, to give an idea of how is this spectrum, I give some reason that's now known about the almost match operator. So what's sigma? So sigma is going to depend on lambda and on the rotation number. So they're going to depend on the coupling constant that's, and also on the rotation in the base. And well, often assumed to be irrational. And it is a Cantor set. So this is one thing. So that's how you should think about the spectrum of measure four minus four lambda. So that's a formula. So it's a Cantor spectrum, often of positive Lebesgue measure, except so the measure when you start with small lambda, then it's a perturbation-free operator where the potential doesn't exist. So for free Laplacian, the spectrum is minus 2, 2, huh? And then spectrum has measure 4, so lambda equals 0. And then it starts shrinking the spectrum once you add this this thing, until it gets to 0 at lambda. So it's equal to 0 for lambda. Lambda equals 1, with the critical coupling, with a good reason to call it critical just because of this. There's other reasons. So it gets to 0, and then it starts growing again. There is, there's many interesting things that happen at lambda equals, at lambda equals 1. So, and, okay. Now, another point that is important, that another reason to see transition to lambda equals 1 is the following, which may be, from dynamical system viewpoint, it's really interesting, is that it's the formula for the Lyapunov exponent. So there exists a formula for the Lyapunov exponent for this operator, which is that the so if energy belongs to the spectrum, then the Lyapunov exponent is equal to max of 0 and log lambda, which means that when lambda is less than or equal to 1, then the Lyapunov exponent is 0. And then in what lambda equals 1, you are in the borderline where the Lyapunov exponent is soon to become positive, and then you're going to see post-Lyapunov exponent in the spectrum, finally, which is non-uniform hyperbolicity, because before you had a uniform hyperbolicity out of the spectrum, but in the spectrum, you're going to start seeing non-uniform hyperbolicity, an interesting thing. So you see that lambda equals 1 is borderline between one regime and the other regime, and then in several sense. Okay. So I'm going to talk about renormalization. There is lots of progress in both of these, for instance. This final result here is there was lots of progress. It was finished in my paper with Svetlana called the Temastini problem, Svetlana Zhitomirskaya. And this part, there were also lots of progress. The last parts were done in my paper with Rafael, that's going to talk about with Rafael Krikorian. So this business. So the points that are more or less taken in my paper with Rafael are related to one particular case of this, because others were done, with zero measure spectrum. At critical coupling. So it's the problems in the interface. And the problems really in the case of bounded type. For bounded type, actually not very large. There is also, in this theory, there is another renormalization that I don't understand, which it's like a Mitsu's renormalization. It only works if all the continued fraction coefficients are very large. It's a special renormalization that's perturbation from what they call a diabatic limit. So there is another renormalization like this, and I don't understand it because it takes. I was told that it goes in space of pseudo differential operators and stuff that. And I really don't understand what's going on, and it's less dynamical, as far as I understand. And we'll talk about some dynamical renormalization that works very well for a small bounded type. So, for instance, golden mean was open. Let me say that this kind of there are several conjectures related to this. So that this is a conjecture that can be traced to 60s, and this to 80s, and actually zero measure spectrum is called a theorem by Hofstadter. this guy of Gödel, Esker, and Bath. So he was interested on this operator and made some pictures. And he called, from physical viewpoint, gives some ideas of, he thought that it looked at the Dirichlet measure, and then it was enough to call it a theorem. And but for the experiments are usually done toward the golden mean rotation number when you do this. And that's one case that was open, for instance. So for instance, we are interested in a very particular system of alpha equals 1 plus square root of 5 over 2, and trying to estimate, to show that the spectrum is zero measure. And that's where some dynamical renormalization is going to come in. So all this is for any alpha. So it's a theorem. So this is a theorem, a real theorem, for any alpha. But a case that were open, there are many different kinds of treatment I'm discussing. It was very open, the measure problem for critical coupling in the golden mean case. And the contour set was open for other cases and so on, but I just want to show some renormalization that is going to work in more than just the golden mean case, but just to fix an idea of where it's useful. So renormalization, you see, is for usually is applied to slow systems and with some kind of with slow dynamics, otherwise it doesn't work very well. And so it's a good candidate to work when Lyapunov exponent is zero, not a good candidate to work when Lyapunov exponent is positive. So let's mention what's going to be renormalization operator. So you have a circle going on here, and then as usual, you pick some interval that's going to be chosen using arithmetic, and look at first return map, and then you get an interval exchange transformation of two intervals. That's going to look at there be a discontinuity. Once you glue the boundaries, you get another circle, and then you're going to have exactly alpha goes to whatever 1 over alpha or minus 1 over alpha that you had before. So you're going to have this, this happens in the base. And what do you do in the fiber? So this is a fiber itself, and in the fiber you just take the, so here you have a return time to the base, and you take matrix products until you return. So you just look at the matrix products, and then you get your renormalized system R of alpha A. You take matrix products, and then you're going to have discontinuity here. That's a little bit trickier to glue, but that is in the case it can be glued if work. You should work with commuting pairs to get something that glues, because working like this, there's something that doesn't glue, and that's annoying. But with commuting pairs, it works. It's just normal business in this stuff. There's no critical point here, so there's no particular point where you should renormalize around, and so there's one freedom that we have for this. But then you have this renormalization operator, and you're taking this big matrix product. You're not changing anything. Well, you're going to change scales here in the base to get some decent circle, but you don't change anything in the fiber. You just take matrix products. If Lyapunov exponent just spots, you get exponentially big products, and there's not much to do. Well, commuting pair, you're just acting with the action. You have some commuting transfer. You leave to R and have to one translation in R and another translation in R, and you never glue. You just change bases in R2. So you look at with these two commuting in this commuting system, and then there's no discontinuity to talk about. So you have this renormalization operator, and you see that positive Lyapunov exponent is going to create problems. But even in case of zero Lyapunov exponent, it's not very clear what's going to do. It's going to be helpful for renormalization. I'm going to have to be able to prove something in this case. So what came to be true is, well, if you have a renormalization operator, the first thing to do is try to prove a priori bounds. Otherwise, you don't. It's not worth much, the renormalization. So first thing to do is to prove a priori bounds, and under some condition that, for instance, zero Lyapunov exponent is a good condition to start with. Not nearly enough for our proof to prove a priori bounds. So what's a priori bounds? Is that the renormalization orbits are precompact. So this is always what a priori bounds mean. And once you have this, it's you can start playing games more or less soft, and or maybe hard. But without this, you don't even start playing the game. So you need to prove this, and there's some convenient assumption. We can try to prove this assuming zero Lyapunov exponent, for instance, not clear. So what you managed to prove was that for almost every E, well, let's say in the with Lyapunov exponent zero, you have a priori bounds. So we prove this, and a priori bounds is not for normalization around anywhere. It's going to, the theorem says that there are going to be a good points in the circle where it's a good idea to renormalize around, and then you're going to get precompact orbs of renormalization. So it's going to be so just they're going to have analytic. So you're going to get a new the sequence of co-cycles. They all going to have good holomorphic extension bounded. Is this the question? Yes. So just a good holomorphic extensions and in some definite domain, and then bounded holomorphic extensions. So we are going to get this. So proof. So how? Why there is this almost every E that's going to come? It comes from the complex part. So here you're going to use something that's non-spectral theory. So what happens actually is that you complexify in another direction the system, it's complexify the energy. So you're going to, energy is a parameter that you're going to exclude, so you complexify the energy. And when you complexify the energy, you get out of the spectrum always, and your system gets always uniformly hyperbolic. So when you complexify the energy, you have the, well, you have the action on, I was talking about the action R2, now it becomes action on C2, but it's good to work on complex projective space. And what happens is that there are one cone field, it becomes uniformly hyperbolic with explicit cone fields. So cone field that appears is a upper half plane is going to be the cone field when E becomes, imaginary part of E becomes positive. The upper half plane is mapped strictly inside itself, well, except for infinity, but then in the second iterate to be really strictly inside. And then you're going to have unstable direction in the, here, in the upper half plane. So you're going to have some stable direction. And essentially what's discussed here is what happened to this unstable direction when energy goes to zero non-tangentially. So you have energy goes to zero, you're going to have unstable direction, and now you converge to a real energy, that's what you're interested in. So this was known before, so I'm just trying to bring it here, so not to be attributed to us. This is picture of C. I'm projectivizing, so I'm here looking at cone fields in projective space. So this is C, this overline C. Here there's an unstable direction that's lying there, and now I'm going to in parameter space and make energy goes to zero, to real, non tangentially, and I'm looking what happened to unstable direction here. So it's going to try to look at limits of this, and the point that unstable direction when Lyapunov exponent is positive goes to the real line. But when it becomes the unstable direction of the real system. But when Lyapunov exponent is zero, it has tendency to go to stay in the complex plane. And but of course, this business of taking non-tangential limit only works if in almost everywhere. So then there is some exclusion of parameters to do this. So once you do this, you're going to get some remanescent of your unstable direction that's going to be in the complex plane. But now your system in the plus imaginary part. But now your system's real. So what your system's doing is rotating around this section. It's not going anymore contracting by it, but rotating or maybe going around. So what this gives you is a explicit conjugation. So this business conjugates measurably because limits become measurable. To a co-cycle of rotations. So you lost the non-commutative part, but your system became awful. Became commutative, but via measurable conjugates, not good. So what comes besides this is some estimate. It comes with explicit estimate, this passage to non-tangential limit, which gives some L2 bound on the conjugate. So you have matrix B of X plus alpha. So this is how the formulas appear. X, B, X minus 1 is a rotation. And B belongs to L2. So you have a control on this on the norms of the matrix that appear. It's much better than it would get for every energy. Generally, you get things like log B belongs to something, but here it's much better. Log B becomes only one, let's say. So with this almost every, it works much better. And with the, under this condition, you have some measurable things, so some points are better than others. So those good points for this, it's going to be the maximum ergodic theorem will appear, are going to be the points where you're going to renormalize around, and you're going to show that your co-cycle products properly rescaled become bounded. So that's so you're going to show that that co-cycle products are going to be bounded around some orbit if you are careful on this. So this is how it goes up to getting a priori bounds. So there is some computation here to get from L2 to interpret, to use this to estimate matrix products to get a bounded product. So once you have this pre-compact, so now these are priori bounds, and now you're happy, you can start doing soft business. And what you need to do is look at the limits, what kind of limits you get. Now here, there is a smart thing to do, is that you have this measurable conjugates to rotations. So rotations, they are characterized by the points in the, so what you have is this measurable section that's reminiscent of unstable direction that lives in the upper half plane. So what you're going to do is, it's like a measurable line, it is a measurable line field because it's complex projective space. So you look at points where it is more or less constant. So you have measurable continuity points of this kind of reminiscent section. So once you, if you look at this kind of measurable continuity points, locally it looks like rotation always around the same section. So when you come back, your rotation more or less along the same section. So what happens is that limits, if you choose again the point correct to be measurable continuity point of that, so limits of renormalization are conjugate to rotations. By a constant. So now it's much better. It's just, it's actually a co-cycle of rotation. Now there's no measurable business. It's going to be a well, honest co-cycle of rotations, which is just analytic. So now this co-cycle of rotations is very easy to analyze. They are generally conjugate to some good models, so that they're going to be conjugate to a constant rotation, co-cycle of constant rotation. So what happens is that your renormalization operator is bringing you, so you're going to now iterate the renormalization operator, you go to limits, and limits are very simple. It's some kind of co-cycles of rotations, and which are actually constant because by change of coordinates, more or less. And so you watch an interesting little neighborhood here to be able to say what happens to larger normalizations and hopefully say what happens to original system. Now, what you need here is some kind of local theory now at this stage. And what's useful here for to conclude, so we have set up to prove this. It's not the direction at which you talk, not caring about much about this result originally. We discovered later that there was a question related. But anyway, you need a little bit of local theory. So what's going to happen is that you're going to get close to constant system by larger normalization. And constant system, if you have some convenient hypothesis on rotation. So here the rotation number when you renormalize doesn't change. I'm supposing it's golden mean, let's say. So once you have a rotation in the basin that's golden mean, and then you have some co-cycle that's near constant, then there is some KAM theory that can be applied. So KAM theory here is easy to note that it's going to be important, because if you projectivize real now, I had projectivized it complex, but let's projectivize here real. So let's projectivize real. It's just why there is some KAM theory related, just a very simple, but so it's just that you have this circle in the base, and now if you projectivize R2, you get another circle here, and you get a two torus where there is some dynamics. And you have like a rotation in both directions, so you have a rotation of the two torus. So perturbations of this kind of systems are minimal to be studied by KAM theory. So just a completely, torus looks like this, let's say. So let's have this KAM theory. And what KAM theory says, among other things, is that there is persistence of quasi-periodic behavior. So here your system was a constant system, it's like a rotation. And if you perturb a little bit, it's going to be lots of of quasi-periodic still quasi-periodic motion. So in particular, zero Lyapunov exponent. So KN theory implies certain persistence Why do I care? On both directions, right? It can be controlled by making a convenient exclusion of energy in the beginning, so that you're going to get some kind of Diophantine condition in the other direction too. So this is one possibility. Another possibility is KN theory in this setting is stronger than usual KN theory, because the rotation in the fiber has less importance than rotation, which was known by the time we did this theorem. That rotation of the fiber is less important. So you can do KN theory by controlling only the base, and you don't get the full control, but you get something with model that contains this part. So this Eliasson, KN theory. So I didn't say, so KN theory, there are many progress. So there's Dinaburg-Sinai. You can do with just this kind of business, just Moser and so on. But it's more convenient to use some kind of more sophisticated thing by Eliasson, which has this format where you just worry about the bases. Now we have certain systems of zero Lyapunov exponent. And now you're in good shape to get contradiction. So you had the formula for Lyapunov exponent. So now go back to the system. So this, I'm in some general situation. But go back to lambda equals 1. So you don't. I'm going to prove that that you have spectrum of zero measure. For lambda equals 1. So we start, assume that spectrum has positive measure, right? Lyapunov exponent is known to be 0. By a priori bounds, then are going to work for almost every energy. So it's going to work sometimes, at least. So that's where contradiction is working. You're going to get a priori bounds. You can normalize your cocycle and get close to constant. And then you're going to have some persistence of 0 Lyapunov exponent. Right? And this is contradiction because very near your system, you have the near to lambda equals 1, you have lambda bigger than 1. And for lambda bigger than 1, you don't have zero Lyapunov exponent. You have a Lyapunov exponent positive. So what I'm saying is that this renormalization cannot work in the borderline to post Lyapunov exponent. Because it is inherently, it takes you to some persistent region where things happen openly in some well-behaved way. So at the borderline, it has to start failing. The renormalization has to fail, and since by this business, it means that the spectrum has to be zero Lebesgue measure in particular. So this closed this. This is how we concluded this. It actually implied more general result, which was actually what you're looking for at the beginning, which has lots of dynamical content. There's a blackboard. So what's this reason? Is that for if alpha has satisfied some kind of Diophantine condition, I'm not going to explicit it. Essentially, it says that. You can renormalize and get to some compact set of Diophantine numbers. You can renormalize infinitely many times, getting to compact set of Diophantine numbers. This has been proven since, but I'm going to talk about 2 years old stuff. So alpha satisfies the hypothesis. Then for almost every energy, you have either post Lyapunov exponent, or you can apply the KAM theory to conclude more than zero Lyapunov exponent, but conjugacy to constant, to a constant rotation, to constant. It turns out to be a rotation. So almost every energy. So this gives the behavior in a, so you have a family of cosacks and you give a behavior for almost every parameter. So dynamically, it's very satisfactory result. Of course, for the kind of problems that are asked in spectral theory, it didn't answer all of them. It answered one of them. Then there was other work to give more results. So it's to work on this field. That's in particular. But the point that you see that there was all this renormalization business that you saw that, well, quite interesting. But at some point, there is interest on this local theory. So that's what I'm going to. Yes. Yes. So this is, so I can say what it is. So that DC is that you specify, so you have parameters kappa tau that you can later let vary. And that you also have DC kappa tau, other parameters that you can. So this is usual Diophantine condition that gives a explicit, this gives a positive measure condition, but not full measure. So this condition is full measure already. It says that infinitely many iterations by Gauss map fall here. So by ergo this, it happens almost everywhere as soon as this has positive measure, and RDC is just union over this. So complement has house of dimension 1/2. Okay, so I lost. Ah, yeah. So it's important to understand this local theory for several reasons. In particular, a good local theory is just really good. It should give the whole subcritical regime in the almost matcher. So here's one goal that's included in what I'm going to talk tomorrow. That almost matcher, you know exactly everything. Well, you don't know everything, but you know that Lyapunov exponent does this, and then there is critical exponent here, right? So critical. So there's a subcritical regime where, well, renormalization should work, or works more or less. So the subcritical regime, which is, let's say, well, you could try to work here. Many people work here, but there are so many people working here that's a little bit dangerous. So let's work here. So if you work here, there's less people working, and actually it's closer to what you're discussing, the kind of ideas. You have slower systems, and it's already in the setting more or less that you're interested. But of course, local theory is more or less like here, and you'd like to have local theory up to here because, well, then it gives more information than this kind of business that I said. So my goal tomorrow is to get here in the local theory. And let me say, so what was the point? Is that... yeah, so we try to get some better local theory that's, let's say, big, because otherwise it's just a tiny bit. And, well, there are some open questions that I'm aiming at. Let me talk immediately after this, we try to get a better local theory. So let's say that there was big success immediately to get a decent local theory in, or non-KAM type, in the case of normal top of the density. I talked here about, you can do this business of co-cycles for maps of the, you have a general map A, from R over Z to SL to R. And you have investigated the case of where A is not homotopic to the constant. Okay, so SL to R has fundamental group Z, and you can this map can do some turns. So the case where the map does some turns, you look at local theory. So what should be local theory? You look at the renormalization limits when it works, or when it's supposed to work, and you look how it looks. So it looks like cocycle of rotations. So you look at cocycles of rotations, and you try to talk about, then they're not going to be conjugate to constant because there's a degree. They're going to be constant to linear cosec with linear dependence on the parameter. So anyway, you have this normal top of the dense, and there is a good local theory. Well, good, fairly, let's say, semi-local. It's much better than local. Which there is going to be no smallness quantifier on the Diophantine condition, or even Diophantine condition is not important here. There's no smallness. There is some condition that makes the theory local. Or there are some other phenomena could happen, probably happen. And, but the condition is fairly ample. It says that essentially it's a C1 open condition in this case. We should not aim so far for the other case. But in this case, it just means that you have these two torus. It has, well, let me draw it like this. It has some horizontal foliation. Like this, and the condition is just that this horizontal foliation is sent by the map transverse to itself. So you have some transversality condition, automatically C1 open. So this kind of condition is what leads to a good local theory, but I'm not going to talk about. So what I'm going to talk about tomorrow is exactly what can happen. It's not going to be so pretty as this, because here there's not going to be a geometric condition that you can just see that implies some kind of behavior. It's exactly, there will be some smallness quantifiers, but the smallness quantifiers will be like one for the almost matcher, and the point is that they don't depend on the particular frequency that you're considering. There will be some assumption, but it's going to be it's the difference between full measure condition and positive measure condition. I have no idea when I am supposed to stop.
In about 10 minutes.
Okay. So we're going to talk about what I'm talking next tomorrow. So yes. So what's happening here is that you're going to have is that what supposedly I motivated that once you normalize, you get to limits of renormalization. So local theories will describe what happened near limits of renormalization. So that's the point. And near limits of renormalization, in the case of Schrödinger equation, which is a co-psychomotopic to the identity, it is just near constant. So you're interested in co-psychos near constant. And I'm saying that there is a KAM theory, but we are aiming at better theory that goes further. And I just mentioned quickly that that you can also do the whole theory in the case of co-psychos non-homotopic to the constant. And in this case, what's understood as local is different because you actually never get close to constant, get close to other things. And here we describe this local theory in this under this geometric condition. So these two local theories that, but I'm only going to talk about one of them. So I'm going to talk about the good local theory for the case of homotopic to the constant. Exactly what happens when you study the Schrödinger equation. And in particular, I'm going to cover this reason. So let me, well, maybe I can state. I can go first since tomorrow I have to cover lots of ground. How is you're going to what kind of theorem are you going to be able to prove is the following is so what kind of theorem for this local theorem you're going to discuss almost match in supercritical regime. So and we are going to assume a Delfontaine condition. So you see that the smallness doesn't depend on the alpha. So that's the point. You need to assume something. Otherwise, if you don't assume anything, you cannot even solve the cohomological equation. So even if you don't not working SL2R, you're working SO2R, there are going to be some trouble just because of small divisors that are going to appear. So it's impossible to avoid completely discussion of Diophantine conditions or et cetera in this setting. But let's concentrate on this business. And what kind of result can... are going to look for. So, for instance, I'm not going to talk about all of this, but let's say, so theorem, let's say, is that the spectral measures, so you have this operator, you can look at spectral measures and that understand the spectral projection and so on. So spectral measures, it's going to be purely, it's going to be dynamical analysis, huh? So but the consequences are spectral, measures are absolute continuous. Without extra assumptions, so we just know another absolute continuous. And another thing that is of interest because of many previous results, although I don't know exactly why it's so interesting, is that so Misha asked about rotation number in the fiber. So there's this notion of rotation number in the fiber. Look how you're going around in that direction, in the vertical direction. And if there is a rotation number hole, and it's going to be it's going to lock, so you get some kind of there's counter spectrum, get some kind of Arnold tones. So the rho is like a Davis staircase. So for a rotation number, it goes like it locks when it's uniformly hyperbolic. Then it grows in this counter set, and then it looks like this type of rotation number. And one theorem that so Bourgain, well, let me say. So the theorem is that rho is half held. So there's works by Bourgain, Goldstein-Schlag, Schlag, and a student of Eliasson called Sana. There are works previous works on this. So many people will care about this, how the whole depends on the energy, half hurdle with respect to energy. It's almost match you in subcritical regime. So pick lambda less than 1 and alpha diophant time. So you consider this in this particular situation, and that this kind of business, who is half hurdle, does not hold if alpha is not diophant time. So it's important at this condition, does not hold if alpha is diophant time in the critical coupling and so on. So, it's proved by dynamical method. So certainly you can understand. So I estimate some dynamical quantities that's connected to the spectral measure. Certainly it has dynamical meaning if you look at the dynamics of the Schrödinger operator. So you can do exponential ith and so on. I don't see how it helps me say anything about the dynamics, but it's actually a very precise dynamical property that imply it, but I cannot say the other direction. What exactly what this implies dynamically? So, but this is here they got essentially those guys get essentially almost half hurdle in some different regimes, and Sana gets half hurdle in the perturbative regime, and the point is that this is optimal. So it's really half hurdle. There is square root singularities somewhere. And now the point, how's the plan of how to get that? It's connected to other dynamical problem that is related to the post-Lyapunov exponent side. That's the aim. So let me just mention another dynamical system that's a different kind. That's exactly the post-Lyapunov exponent regime. That happens when you take the Fourier transform of this one. So what's going to happen is that you are going to look, you have the un plus 1 plus un minus 1 plus 2 lambda cosine 2 pi theta plus n alpha un. And you take the Fourier transform of this. So Fourier transform will bring this to 2 cosine once you do this. You look at the Fourier coefficient, there will be 2 cosine here, and it will appear diagonally. And here it will appear a Laplacian. So it's essentially there's some self-duality. So here it will appear lambda un plus 1 plus un minus 1. It is an important reason. So the dual, you can do this duality game in other systems, but in general you don't get a dynamical system. As the dual, you can do this here. If you had something else as cosine here, you're going to get some other kind of difference operator here, but it's not going to be a finite dimension dynamical system in general. So so connection to dynamical system is better in this case. And that's why you can compute so far. One reason. There are other reasons that you can actually compute directly many things by hand. So you get this. So of course, if you're interested in spectral properties, you can divide by stuff. So you can divide by lambda here. And so this means that there is a duality between lambda and lambda minus 1. So if you are in supercritical regime, then the Fourier transform takes you to supercritical regime, with the regime of post-Lyapunov exponent. And problem that's going to be of fundamental importance in this analysis is the problem of which is going to be a non-uniform hyperbolic system. The problem of coincidence of stable and unstable directions. So we have going to get, although that's the composition, it's just measurable. So what happens is that maybe you have a coincidence of stable and unstable directions. This means, of course, that there is some bad, usually they are transverse, there is some then theta, where things, when you iterate for future vector, a certain vector is contracted, and the same vector is contracted to iterate in past. So what it means is that an exponentially decaying in both directions, the decaying eigenfunction you had n for the dual operator. So that's what you get. You get some, because I said that you have this vector u0, u minus 1 that you take the stable equal unstable direction at a point, and then it decays in the future, decays in the past. It's going to be in L2, but it's actually going to be exponentially decaying. So you get this eigenfunction, and the point that now you try to, so those are Fourier coefficients of something. So you take a u of x is equal to some u hat n exponential to pi I and x. So you do the, you see what it is Fourier transform of. And then you see that a of x times u of x, now for the original system that you're interested in, you're going to have this, and then there'll be some business here that's probably exponential to pi I theta, u of x. You construct this vector, and it's going to take you exact to a little rotation of it. Same thing here. It's a bad idea. U of x. So what you see here is that if you define u, I should have done this, u of x equal exponential to pi I theta, u of x minus alpha, then a of x times u of x is going to be exponential to pi I theta times u of x minus alpha. So this guy is what's supposed to be the invariant direction in the complex plane that you're looking for, where you're rotating around in the imaginary side. So that's what you're looking for that appears in the other theorem, but it appeared there by some non-tangential limit and came measurable and so on. Here you get an analytic function because of this. So the point that so this is exactly localization reducibility. So localization is this exponential decaying eigenfunction, and reducibility is this constant guy, that this thing here that you use to conjugate your system to a constant. The problem is that, unfortunately, not all systems are reducible, and not all energies admit an exponential decaying eigenfunction. What happens is the following, that when you have bound, you can be reducible either to rotation or to parabolic system. So when it's reducible, it should be either grows like linearly or it should be bounded, right? But what happens that when you're in boundary of gaps, you're conjugated to parabolic. What happens that once you're boundary of gaps, you're almost becoming uniformly hyperbolic. It means that you're parabolic at that moment and you shift and becomes hyperbolic. So near this guy, you're trending to grow linearly. So by generic argument, you get that generically you are unbounded. But this parabolic system is just some kind of countable condition. So you found many energies where you are no unbounded but not linearly growing. So what happens is that there is generically no reducibility, and hence this cannot work always. If you want this kind of results that I'm discussing, that are very, you need to understand all energies. So our point now is not to exclude any more energy and pick an energy. Look at the stable and unstable direction. Try to say something about the stable and unstable direction. You're not going to be able to tell that they're going to coincide. You're going to say something about this behavior of decay or not decay. So you're going to say something about this kind of eigenfunction that you can construct. And I say something that I can say immediately, that's a dynamical systems point, that any time you have a system that's not uniformly hyperbolic, there is a vector that's not contracted, that's not expanded in the future, and it's not expanded in the past. There's a vector. This is just a Meynier kind of argument. So, because if there is always some direction that you can look and get any kind of expansion, it's the same thing happens in a one-dimensional real system. Then must appear something that doesn't contract. So there's a bounded solution. So you can get always by dynamical system and other methods. You can get Fourier series with bounded coefficients. So what you're going to do tomorrow is pick this Fourier series with bounded coefficients and do the Fourier transform and get not a function. But you're going to analyze what you get once you do this, and try to. So tomorrow is an analysis of the dynamics. You try to improve the knowledge of the dynamics by knowing that there exists this divergent Fourier series that is what wants to be the conjugacy to constant. Okay, now I think I spoke for the. Well, spectrum is counter sets for the Amos matcher. There are two reasons. There's the Diophantine regime, which I may speak immediately. So Diophantine regime, what's going to happen? You're going to find those eigenfunctions. You're going to try to find those eigenfunctions. And there cannot be, so there's a things of Eliasson and a guy called Puch that show that in this situation you're going to, when you're reducible with a certain rotation number, where you should be the boundary of a gap, then you are reducible to a parabolic system. So in many situations, you can guarantee that you're reducible to parabolic. And then once you're reduced to parabolic, you move a little bit and become uniform hyperbolic, so in boundary of a gap. So the point is to prove that you can find this kind of eigenfunction corresponding to some section where theta is equal to zero. That's going to, well, then you get some kind of contradiction. But you're going to have to find some eigenfunction corresponding to parabolic system. So this, so invariant section. So so this is one point, so that you conjugate your system to parabolic, and then you are in the boundary of a uniform hyperbolic when you do this. Another reason, so of course, this theorem doesn't need a Diophantine condition. What happens is that there is the other regime where you consider rational system. So for rational system, you compute the spectrum and found some gaps. And then if you're sufficiently close to rational, it's going to still be some gaps. So you're going to get some kind of holes in the spectrum. Now, the problem is that, unfortunately, those two business don't fit together. So then there is a, that's why there is a long paper on this, that there is some kind of bad region where none of those two methods want to work. And still, we have to try to make it work. So that's more or less, there's one region for reason for Diophantine, there's one reason for Liouville, and there is some intermediate region where the reasons don't actually work, but they can be tricked on.